Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You're listening once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. I'm your host, Imam Alfred, and we're going to be shortly joined by the street doctor.
Hello?
Doctor?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Loud and clear. You call in.
Okay, brother.
Call in now. We're ready for you. The street doctor.
No, I called in, but I can't flip over. Only thing, I just called. That's why I'm calling you.
Call again, and I'm on the line waiting for the street doctor.
Okay, I'm calling again now.
Yes, sir. Thank you, doctor. So we'll be joined by the street doctor in just momentarily. We had some connections problems, but we expect to have the street doctor. He is... You know, when you call 911 in some cities, you get the police or the ambulance. But people in Newark and many other cities in New Jersey, when they call in, they call to reach the street doctor. And I met him. You're on the line with the street doctor.
Okay.
You're on the line,
okay,
doctor.
Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
That's what I'm talking about. First of all,
I'm talking
about
loud and clear. Extra, read all about it. The suite is all about it. I got it right. I'm going to introduce you properly.
Yes,
you know, I will have a doctor in the house and you don't introduce him properly. You know, folks, I've been on the air for 4 years. It's a privilege and an honor to have with us the street doctor. I was at a big meeting where they had the recovery community, all the big CEOs and directors and people. You know, some of y'all may know I've seen all the great leaders from the civil rights movement, the Nation of Islam, and many other movements. And this charismatic figure with a $1 million smile, I thought he was doing an ad for the dental profession, called him up and introduced himself. I think he even had a white coat on. He said, "My name is the street doctor." I said, "What kind of doctor is that?" I said, "Because I have a DDS, a doctorate of denigrification scientist, and I always respect another doctor." So when I didn't know very much about him, I knew to Jersey, but I asked my 13-year-old son, "Son, you ever heard of the street doctor?" He said, "Everybody knows him. He used to have candy in his car. He used to pick up bodies off the street." So that's enough introduction to tell the street doctor, I want to know from you, where did you come from, and how do you become known as a street doctor with an SD, the Doctors of the Streets?
Yes. First of all, again,
welcome to Religion Means Why.
It's an honor to be on your show. I listen to you when I do have time, and you cover a lot of areas. So let me begin where it started. 2001. They was doing a rally, and I had a white coat on because I was going like into the schools and stuff, and I would change. And what happened? We had this brother named Ishmael Salam from Elizabeth, and I had spoke, and he said, "Last but not least, the street doctor," and that's how I got the name.
I like that. Now, what is Dr. Street? What did you grow up in? And tell me, how did you learn the streets? Because that's a skill in and of itself.
First of all, I grew up in Newark, December 26, 1947. It was a snowstorm. It was my mother, God bless her, and that she told me. And Pershine Avenue, Evans Street, you know, all over the place, Ridgewood Avenue, tough areas. And I was raised by a pastor, W.D.J. Jenkins, and I had two complexes. One was I was the preacher's son, and the other one was I was short. And so I had to prove to my society that I was in, that I was just tougher than them. And jail got involved, kept going to jail and what have you. But I always said if I would have to do it over again, I would do it over again, because if I didn't go through that, first of all, I wouldn't be on your radio show, because I wouldn't be the street doctor. So I had to go through all that, and we all go through different things in life. They say life is a journey, not a destination. It gets greater later. And that's how it happened. And what happened was after I got sick and tired of being sick and tired, I said I have to change. And thank God, you understand that I did. And this is why this is a mission. If it was a job, I would have been quit. It was a mission. So I've been doing this, brother, now since 2001. So we're talking about 16 and 17, 400 and some funerals. I go to jail. I go in school. I travel. Just giving motivational good work, if you will, passing it on so nobody don't ever have to go through what I went through. So to make a long story short, fast forward, I've been to hell and back. And I love what, you know, I love what I do. I had a food truck for about 3 years. That I had a chance to feed thousands of people, which I still do, but I just don't have that van. I got another one now. I go into prisons to give inspiration that if I can do it, you can do it. I go to the kids, let them know that right is right. But of course, everything is flipped now. Is right is wrong, or wrong is right. Right, and it's just so much stuff. And I have me and a few brothers, and the name of the tour is called Believing in Yourself. And in that language there, believing in yourself, everything coming out of that, I experienced as far as drugs, bullying, education. It's so many things that comes out of that. So as me and you had spoke before, we're starting off Monday. And just like I told you, we want to definitely hit Linden and the Raw Waves. And I talked to the staff, and they was very happy to hear that, you know, you will help is to get this word out so we can start changing the mindset of the people.
Yeah, because if the mindset isn't changed, you can give them gold, you can give them diamonds. You and I were able to survive the Nicky Barnes era, the Frank Lucas, the Akbars, all these people. And we still,
yes.
You know, I tell young people, I said, you know, be smarter than a carpenter ant. Now, a carpenter ant, if you attack a carpenter ant, they'll break the colony off and go somewhere else. If we see Nicky getting knocked off, and we see this one getting knocked off, and Flippy getting knocked off, why in the hell should I fall into the same trap? I don't blame the prison industrial complex for setting it up, but I think we're fools to walk into it. What do you say to that, Doctor?
You know what? Right on time, brother. I have a saying. It says, don't blame the puppet, but blame the puppeteer. Luther King, I love you, Martin. Martin said, you know, you sell alcohol and then you lock them up when they get drunk. You know, so the thing is that Napoleon said, I was reading something on him, he said men are ruled by toys. You know, so they throw all these toys out here and they get us trapped in it. And we have to be strong enough is to, I call it subliminal seduction. Remember that book, brother, back in the day? Subliminal seduction.
Yes, sir, I do.
Yes. Brother, I never forget that. Brian Keyes, this was like about 30 or 40 years ago, and I never forgot that. And today, they got a thing. They say McDonald's don't have to show you the hamburger. All they do is play the music and make you hungry. And they say Nike don't have to show you the product, which is the sneakers. All they do is flash the sign and say do it. So we are victim of all these subliminal messages. Our kids with the Twitter and all the folks. I mean, people be walking by with the phone. You be blowing the horn. You know, everything. It's no more human touch, brother. It's no more that. Everything is like peanut butter and jelly in the same jar. You know, everything is fast. Fast food, fast this, 30-second sound bite. I was checking out the TV. I said, you know what, let me do some experiment. Out there, ABC, CBS, and NBC, right? When they have a commercial, it's on all the channels. The same truck that go in Geno's is the same truck that go in McDonald's. It's all corporate. Everything is hooked it up except us.
Street, doctor, what do you say to a young man that's thinking right today? Well, maybe street doctor, as one young man told me, he didn't know how to do it right. I can do it better than him. What would you advise a guy who's getting ready to leap off of a bridge and he already seen the other guy leap off, die. What advice can you give to him?
Boy, this is something, man. I used a scenario one time. I said, it's a guy about to jump off the bridge, right? And I'm gonna save him. I ain't going to try. And, man, you go up there, he'll probably pull you down with him. And I said, I'm going up on the bridge, and I said, excuse me, can you hear me? First of all, he don't want to jump off there. What he's looking for attention. And that's a lot in which our kids is looking for. They're looking for attention. Tell him, hold on, I'm coming up there is to jump off the bridge with you. Just to get his attention. And then I would say, you know what? I ain't jumping off that bridge because I know if I jump off that bridge, I won't have a chance to fight back or whatever going through my mind. So you know what? I'm going to change my mind. Come on with me. You know, psychology is the best. I call it the carrot. They said that the circus don't change, only the clowns. You know, so everything is psychology in this world. And we have to be people like us and other people that's out there that's on the same page as us, right? We have to use our experience. You ever heard that? They say experience is the best teacher. We done been
yes.
through it. Okay, so we're able is to relate, not that we dress nice or all this or other stuff, because it's in the heart. And one thing about this generation here, right, even though they do crazy stuff, right, they recognize real.
And they say real recognize real. And that's why
real
I'm
recognize,
telling you.
That's right, brother.
From the you can go any place in North.
Any
I mean,
place,
I'm
brother.
Telling you, most pastors, most imams, they can't go on a block. People see them as high-polluted, but everybody knows the street doctor because you have known to do the work of Jesus, the work of Muhammad, the
Come
people
on.
Of the neglect. From what I studied of Jesus' life, he wasn't in the synagogue. He was in the highways and hedges.
And the byways.
Talking
That's
to
right,
people,
bro.
But yeah. giving them, not accepting their behavior. I know you don't accept violent behavior. I know you don't accept
That's
bullying.
Right.
But you understand
right.
it. You don't
understand.
Accept being a dropout, but you understand it, and you tell
yes.
that person to believe
That's
in yourself. We're going to make that tour. Now, you know, I'm in a little, what I would call, I lived in New York most of my life, what I would call a one-horse town. It just
right.
amazed me that in a city like Rahway and Linden, where the living people say it's good living,
right,
and you have young people trying to live like people are living in the salt water of Newark in the 60s and 70s. Some even trying to go back in the 90s when it was the crack era. They want the B Street. Talk to us
right.
about that street, doctor. You're the doctor of the street.
You know what, brother? You know, and I'm glad you know you're touching on some real good stuff. So it's easy as the answer because you're asking the right stuff. You know what this thing is? I don't have what you would call the solution to say, hey, I got the prescription. It's to stop all this. There won't be no more killings. There won't be no more shootings. No, I don't have that. But I do have this. They have the thing they call little hinges swing big doors. They say when spider webs unite together, they can tie up a line. So with people like you, with the media, bringing people on, it don't be enough conversation. But the thing is, brother, is this. You know what's really going on, brother? And I see this every day. The drugs, brother. Brother, I don't know. We all, the K2, and the reef ain't like it used to be. The coke ain't like it used to be. The dope ain't like it used to be. And I'm not trying to promote it. But everything is different with this crazy stuff. And everywhere I go, man, this drug epidemic is big, brother. Because people is losing their mind. And I be seeing people, I say, wow, man, I wonder what happened to him. And it's not looking down on nobody because I came through that myself. And thank God, you understand, that he allowed me to still be here so I can pass it on and say, hey, man, you know, I'm an example, man, that you can stop. I'm an example that you can do better, you know. They got a thing they said, I was just reading. They say, King say, anybody can be a servant. Or anybody can be great. All you have to do is be a servant. And that's what it is. And, brother, it's the drugs, brother. That's 90% of what we see going on. Well, I can't
and
say
doctor, let me ask
it.
You this.
Yes.
Is a man taking drugs, is he a happy man, or is he trying to mask some pain?
He's sad, brother. See, the drugs, you know, because I was a victim. The drugs is, you know, now I can talk now. Nobody won't laugh at me. You know, all kinds of crazy. Whatever, you know, everybody
ain't
got the same.
Doctor, I'm in the amen corner with you. You see, I came up in the era when smoking pot, as they call it, reefer, weed,
yeah,
was fashionable.
Yeah, man.
And I still say if I had to do it all over again, I wouldn't even touch the reefer. Because reefer led me to a lot of places. It led me to the cane. I went from the cane to the kink, and I went from the kink to the pipe. And everything I had went up in the smoke. But it was really the best thing ever happened to me because I then had to examine that little short boy who had been bullied, who was ashamed of having old parents. And I began to realize that all I was doing was trying to mask pain. But I realized that you have to admit that you're in pain and accept it and join together with others. And that's what these young people need. They need love and compassion. Behind all that stuff is a lot of fear. Many of them growing up in a home where mama had to do things and she was ashamed
Come
of
on,
the
brother.
Children. And nobody is talking to
Go ahead, brother. Go ahead, brother. Go ahead. Go ahead, brother.
I rarely share my story on radio, but being with a doctor and real versus real, would real, that's what we want to tell the people. They ain't got to go through the pain I've been through. I've already been there for you.
So you know what we're going to do, brother, with this tour? This is what we're doing, believing in yourself. Once we get there and give our spill, if you will, we're not just leaving. So we're going to have, we got contacts with a guy that's in the audience, and this always happens, with a guy that's in the audience say, you know what, I'm feeling what they're saying, right? So we're going to let them know after we do our lecture, and they know do the lecture and then we leave, you know, yeah, man, we got it off. I ain't into that. What we're going to do is when them people come to us at the end, and we're going to have a Q&A. I love Q&A. Because that's when they really let you know. Because it's about them. Only thing we're doing is just bring that up. But we want to be there for them is when they come. Because somebody's going to come up that's in that audience using drugs. And we done tapped in that area because we done told our story. See, it's something when you're teaching and you're looking down on people. So, man, let me get out of here, man. I don't want to hear that. But when you talk about yourself, you feel me? That's coming from the eye. When you start talking about yourself, what you went through, and then you showing the results of what happened, and then you getting that person that's in that audience hope. So when that person can come, because we open, that person come and say, listen, man, I want to change. This doesn't happen. And that's why we revisiting this with this believe in yourself, because now we can give them help. Because we've got contacts now. So if a guy says, you know what, man, listen, I'm tired of drugs, man. Can you help me? Absolutely. And then we're going to help them. Hey, go a guy, you understand, listen, man, I'm tired of beating up my wife or I'm tired of beating up my girlfriend. I got a thing where I love to hit women. So he's going to get help. And I can go on and on. That's what this tour is about. This tour is about, you know, believing in yourself. Martin Luther King called it the innate. The innate is everybody got that inside them, but they got to know how to tap into it. You know, they think prayer is corny. They think all, I'm telling you, they don't flip here. They ain't praying or do nothing. George Washington Carver said a lot of people pray and their prayers don't go as high as the ceiling. You know, so the thing is getting them back in contact with their real selves. And once you get in contact with your real self, and then you're in contact with God. But other than that, you're in contact with Satan.
And, you know, I like that sweet talk, because that's what I am. See, that's why a lot of people, even in my audience, can't understand me. I'm not trying to convert people to Islam or Christianity.
Nobody.
I'm trying to first convert them to themselves.
Because,
you see,
man.
I've been a Muslim and used drugs. I've been a spiritual. But I'm going to make a confession on the air that I've never made before. I've been an imam and used drugs. I was in pain. I'm a human being first and foremost, before I was anything else. And, you know, I have to tell the audience this, and I'm glad we're on Street Doctor because you made me real. You know, I had to kind of hid behind my title. But I'm a human being. It's been in a lot of pain. My grandmammy, Lula Nalgum, was a slave, and the pain that she experienced was transmitted to my mother, who transmitted that pain to me.
Come on.
And it was somebody reaching out a hand to me. I thought I was fooling everybody. I was using drugs. I didn't think nobody knew it. I was a ma'am. Nobody knew it. I asked the guy one time, I said, did you think I knew I was using drugs? He said, I knew it. I said, damn, I thought I'd fooled everybody. But the thing is, what happens, there are a lot of Alfreds out here. There's a lot of Earls out here that think that they're hiding. But they just want somebody to peep that game without shaming them. We're not out here to shame anybody. We're here to pull everybody up. And that's the kind of people I met when I was growing up. You know, I was growing up as a child. I met great, great, great people. Some had big titles, some had no titles. But they always would say to me, when I was little, I expect a lot more of you. I'm surprised at you.
And
what these people need is somebody to pick them up and give them hope.
Go ahead. Brother, check this out. Oh, you hitting the right areas. That's the village, brother. A village to raise a child. It's an Ethiopian proverb in which I just dropped when I say, when spider webs unite together, they can top a line. Then they got an African proverb that said, take a village to raise a child, right? It's no village. You know, today they're afraid of our kids. I ain't messing with him. We are so divided. No more love. So the guy, you understand, he wears his pants halfway down, he's going to drop them now. Yeah, ain't nobody saying nothing later for him. Who really cares? You know, yo, brother, come on, man, what is you doing? My bad. You know, it's not enough of us, you understand, and this is not being better than nobody because we all, you know, have faults. But as we grow, life is a journey, not a destination. To get greater later, you know, we're put here is to help each other. Booker T. Washington say, when your brother is down, lift him up. You're not lifting him up, you're lifting yourself up. Satchel Paige, my man, he said, one thing in the world, no, this is Josephine Baker. Josephine Baker said, one thing in the world you will never get punished for, and that's giving, you know. So all these great people, I read about them. I say, wow, man, they was great. And this lady was a banana girl. But to me, she was a prophetess because what she did, she went in the, got all them kids out of there, called them the Rainbow Tribe. She was doing extraordinary stuff. Went in the army, you understand, started bringing the black and the whites together. You know, Muhammad Ali, he was going in the corner praying. Do you know how many people, you understand, when he was in the corner praying that came to Islam? You know, so it's people that's here, you understand, you here for a reason. And it's everybody. See, this ain't no chosen thing because everybody is a star in God's eye.
That's right. That's exactly right. And, you know, I think, I notice all the big leaders, none of them have gone to do what you're doing and what I'm going to join you in doing. Because, every day I go out and I talk to people. People say, man, you talk to that guy. That guy's a very dangerous guy. But I appeal to his humanity. He
his
was
humanity,
once
brother.
A innocent person. He was
child
once a child.
That's right.
So I want to ask you this question. You go into some of the numerous streets that people are terrified of going into, and I have not met one person in Newark. Now, I mean, I know some dangerous people in Newark.
Right.
And, you know, their parents couldn't talk to them. How is it that you, the street doctor, is able to go into neighborhoods, pick up bodies where the cops are scared to even come pick the body up? What explains the street doctor's ability to navigate these streets?
And let me, brother, check this out. This is deep. Yea, do I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. I fear no evil. God is with me. You know, David went into the lions. See, all this is symbolic, but
That's
it's
right.
happening. You feel what I'm saying? So
I feel you.
They recognize, and see, because all this is vibration. You know how you step in a room and you feel out of place? You're not out of place. It's people that's in there is out of place. Now, there's somebody in that room, or maybe a percentage in there, that's glad you in that room because they feel your vibes. You know, so it's vibration. So if you come in with a hidden agenda, and that's anywhere you go, you know, you're going to feel advised. And boy, are you asking the right show. I was at this thing with a guy named Dalai Lama. This was some years ago, and I spoke. And I said, God is good, but I wasn't getting the right feedback because, you know, usually you say that in the church anywhere, and you hear the echo is all the time, but I didn't hear a lot of that. So I wasn't out of place. I was in place because God wanted me to be there. I was amongst Buddhists. You know, that's a Buddhist tradition, okay? But wherever I go, don't get it twisted, okay? I always put God first. You feel what I'm saying? Because when you put him first, yeah, and that's in any religion, regardless of who you call him, and I respect that. So fast forward, so after when I did that, somewhere I read and said, God said, when you talk about me, I talk about you. When you talk about me in the front of a company, I talk about you in the company. What happened was the room lit up with angels, which I couldn't see. But the vibrations were so strong. Did you know I broke down, brother? After I finished my speech, revisited and looked at that, because if you would ask me, well, did you have any notes? I lost my notes. But as soon as I mentioned God, in that building, it was at the New Jersey Pack, something like 3,000 to 4,000 people. When I got in front of all them, the street doctor and all the other names that I go by left, and the creator took over. So I was just a triquiloquist, if I'm saying, like a puppet. And he went and spoke through me. And when I sat down, I started shaking. And I looked up, and he was all standing more and more. And then Dalai Lama came over, and he bumped his head on me, which is, I found out later, it was tradition. You know, and I left. That's where I'm at. You know, so I'm an experience so much with the Forest Whitakers and the Ushers and, you know, all that, because I just being myself. That's why I chose that title, you know, being yourself. Once you know, believe in yourself. Once you believe in yourself, the rest is history. And know why, brother, in closing with this, once you believe in yourself, that's not no script, because that's coming from the Creator. And everything bows to you.
But Doctor, we're gonna have to. How much more time you got? Because we want to take some callers. If you like to speak directly, not through, not to, with, but to speak directly with the street doctor, all you got to do is dial 805-727-7013. Press 1, and you will be served. We're talking with the street doctor. We're preparing for a tour. The doctor's already, I caught the doctor on a tour in my town. But I want to go through Chilltown and Jersey City, Camden. I want to go to all these things. Because once you got street creeds in Newark, see how you can test whether a person is relevant. Most of the young people, they don't know who Cornel West is. They don't know him. They don't know, that's hardly a preacher in this country that's ever walked the streets. Really, far as I know, there hasn't been a preacher that walked the streets since Martin and Minister Malcolm. They, the rest of the people, they don't know them. They see them driving by. They think they're irrelevant. I was in a homeless encampment in New York the other day.
Right.
A guy asked me for some money. I gave him $5. I said, but now I want you to know you ain't playing me. But I said, let's pray together. And I went right in the encampment. Not with fear, but with the Spirit of God. And I said, whatever it is that you guys want, I pray God gives it to him. Because, look, I've been homeless before. I know what it is to be homeless. So he looked at me. I had my son town. He said, you been homeless? Yeah. I said, I've been a few other things, too. Some of the things y'all are doing right now. I said, now, y'all look too innocent to be doing what I was doing. They looked at me.
Don't even go down. Go ahead, brother.
I said, I told them how they beamed me back down. They got to be intelligent life down here, because the damn sure ain't any up here. Doctor, what is it about being real to have other people feeling you as being real?
Because what you're doing is you're tapping. When you're real, everybody is real. Everybody. That's why we're here. So once you tap, because a baby can teach you something. Don't get it twisted. So once you tap into that individual, regardless of race, creed, or color, ethnic group, or whatever, right, because we're here,
and we don't do enough relating to each other, the human family. But once you real, that realness, I touch the realness in that guy that's nodding. That's why if you walk in and he's nodding, he'll give you the peace. If he's a Christian, he'll, you know, Jesus. Because he just wounded at that moment. But that moment, you know, that moment, Whitney Houston just popped in my mind and said, this moment in time, one of my favorites, right? In that moment, you know, they're tightening up because you touched it that real, you know? I remember Minister Farrakhan had said something. He said the reason why when he shakes somebody's hand or he meets somebody, regardless of who, he bowed. And I always wanted to know why. And one day he gave it up. He said, the reason why I'm bowing to the God that's in you. I never forget that, man. You know, so you had all kinds of great people that come through, you know, a lot of them. He said, you done killed the lion, but the cubs run loose. And let me just say something to the listening audience, right, because I can go on and on. All this came through. I was in solitary confinement for 10 years. I came out 1 hour, and that was for recreation. And all the rest of the hours I had to live in there. God was getting me prepared for this mission. But anybody ain't going to take this mission. How can you just keep going like you're going? Because I was being prepared for this mission. It's 1,759 rights just in the box. A guy said, whoa, man, you never forget that count. I said, absolutely. And the reason why I never forget that count, sanity, I counted through. And then what I did, I took it to another level. I broke time down. 86,400 seconds in a day. I read one book a day, brother, for 9 years. The first year, I was like out of. Then I said, hey, man, I'm stuck. Let me go on and educate myself. So I became a philosopher. I became a lawyer. That's how I got out. I started getting other people out. They said, oh, no, this Negro is messing with our money. Because jails and all these halfway houses, it's money. People make money off our misery. Okay. And they see that. You walk around, you ride around, and you see so many people, you understand, out here, you know, that suffering. They suffering. So it got to be people like us, brother, especially you, because you're on the airwaves. Every chance you get, you understand, and letting the people know that they are bad potato chips with the dead.
You know, you alluded to being in solitary confinement. I thought you had had a doctorate from Harvard or maybe Rutgers. Tell us how you come to be in solitary confinement. Were you in solitary because you were in, locked up in a library somewhere studying? How did you come to spend time away? Some people call it the universe. Just tell us a little bit about your background.
Right on time. They had to struggle on Detroit Red. To the people, to the family, but the Detroit Red later on became Malcolm X. Detroit Red had to go with, but when Detroit Red went in, all the way, and he mastered that dictionary. That's the oldest dictionary. Then I tried that. I couldn't get that, but I got the serial count and 86,400 seconds in a day. And then he was like a mentor to me. I said, wow, man, look at him. He had the process. Everybody seemed like Malcolm X. You know. And then this other story that other people done with, you know. So through that research, I read this book. It said if I had 8 hours to chop down a tree, I would spend 6 hours chopping it. Marshall said one thing about telling the truth, you have to remember what you said. You know, so I'd never forget all these different people I spoke, and I saw a dream. And then the next thing I know, I became a lawyer.
It's so personal to ask you this question. I'm sure you'll answer it. How much time did you do in jail? You say you spent 8 years in solitary. You know, they're now talking about solitary confinement. Were you confined to federal, state, or just jail, or what? Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, it was a long trip that I had. And to the listening audience, I'm at bankrupt. And what happened was, we was more of a threat murderer, there's the car thief, the kingpin, and all this other crazy stuff. Because even though it was wrong, what I did, but at least I had enough sense to go and get the money. They had this white guy named Rick Sutton. I had a chance to meet stuff. And they asked Willie, the fan, back then, why you found back and told you have to run for the money with that? You know, so we had all kinds of problems doing that stuff. And God blessed a lot of stuff. So a lot of them I could see for the money. So I had a start off with 150. All right. Then, because I had banks all over the place. And then I worked it down to 58. And then I started studying. I became a lawyer without Esquire. And this case called Ferretta versus California, which is means pro se. You can represent yourself. I represented myself. They beat me up, though, but they taught me a lot. And then one day I read this case called State versus McKinley. It was a drug case. And in this case, they said drug is the disease. To reading this case and finding out what this individual, you understand, how he got out was he did that because he was on drugs. So I put in a motion, and I said the reason why I robbed it all the bank because of drugs. And half of the jail laughed at me. Man, this nigga that lost his mind. And what happened was they had to bring me to court, and they granted the motion. 17 years later, brother. Okay, so what they did, they had to cut my sentence for me to fit that. And I came home November 2000. I went in June the 13th, 1986. I got released November while I'm in here, but I had to get prepared. So fast forward, I got out. They gave me 15 years probation, which I didn't suppose you did, but I'm out now. And I had a chance to be back with the family, start changing my life. Know how long I did off that 15-year probation? I did 6 months. The probation officer said, you ready? Go and help the people. And took me off. And ever since, it's been 16, 17 years now. I've been doing the same thing nonstop. Yes, helping.
Now, you, when I first met you, you were pretty much, you were sharper than a dad, cleaner than the board help. Back there's the board help. I never seen you with nothing but fresh clothes on. Use that expression. You have been self-supporting in your ministry of people. You've lived pretty much off donations. You've been, let's talk about that. When I met you, there used to be a meeting with all the people in recovery, all the people like the president of Integrity House and all those people, and that's why I first met you at.
Right.
How is it that you were able to support your ministry?
And the funny thing from now, trying to get the score. We have 501c3 that I'm trying to have a church. And the people are going to take part and get fun. And what happens, if you get these different places that I was telling you, you say, yes, you know, I'm going to get you out of Broadway. I'm going to use different places to go about thoughts to write a letter just to the sponsor. That's the money. So, for instance, if you say Street Doctor, they got this school out here or this organization. Y'all would be ideal to keep on believing in yourself, right? They don't have to pay a penny because it's already paid for. The only thing they do is just have a letter to go to that person who sponsored. Example, say your radio station, you say Street Doctor, we're going to sponsor y'all so-and-so. All right. So wherever we go, okay, your radio station get the letter, okay, from wherever we go that you sponsor. Say, you know, thank you to your radio station and thank you to you or whatever. And that's what we're doing now. We're picking up. So we got one CWA, they're doing something. One of the banks, this Black Bank, City Bank, I talked to them today. I got to get back with them. They want to be a sponsor. So we're getting all these sponsors. And to the people, you understand, who may, you know what, this is great. We need this, we need motivation, they on it, you know what I mean? They can get in contact with you or me. So I would like to do that right now. My P.O. box is, P.O. box 28225, Newark, New Jersey, 71001. Again, my P.O. box is streetdoctor28225, Milton, New Jersey, 07101. My email is streetdoctornwk@gmail.com. streetdoctornwk@gmail.com. The number is 973-600-0877. Again, the number is 973-600-0877.
I'm going to get with you and my staff. We're going to have planned this tour. We want to go all over this state.
I want to
and
hit
eventually
the whole...
to other a charity starts at home and spread abroad. Sweet doctor, how did you come to meet the Dalai Lama?
This lady called me, brother, and said, I submitted your name because Dalai Lama is coming to New Jersey PAC, and I submitted your name to be on the panel and to have breakfast with. I said, all right, go ahead and do it. Yet and behold, I get a call. See, Dr. Yet, you've been approved to be on the panel with Dalai Lama. That's how it happened. And since you brought that up, let me tell you about Forrest Whitaker. Forrest Whitaker went to this company called Brick City. Every way I do that, I'm going to meet this guy they call the street doctor. And he met me. And he bowed. He's a humble guy. He said, it's an honor to meet you. And I said, yes, sir. So on his way out, I gave him my phone number. I said, anytime you can call me. About 2 months later, I get a call from DC Magazine. Street doctor? Yes. I thought it was a halt, whatever you call it, piece of plan. Says, Forrest Whitaker told us to get in contact with you, and we want you to speak for him at the New York big place. Yeah, I'll say all of them. So I said, okay. So they said, so what we want you to do, we want you to send us some tickets, and what have you. I had somebody to see that, right? I get a call about 2 weeks later, and they say, okay, Sunday, you have one guest, and we're going to pick you up. Where to pick you up from? I told them to pick us up, pick me and my cameraman up from the street warrior's office. They came with the limo, brother. The rest is history.
So this is, has there been a documentary? I know you've been on Kiss.
Yes.
On Bob
yes.
Slate's show.
I have.
There been a documentary done on you yet?
Yes. I'm glad you brought that up. I have a book out. It's called The Thumb Press. Okay. Already gave that attention.
I think we got a bad connection. Can you hang up and call back in? Because there's a static in the line. If you can hang up and call right back in. We can get a better.
I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna do that right now.
Can you do that? All right. Meanwhile, folks, you can call in at 805-727-7013, and you can speak with the street doctor. The question becomes: is there a doctor in the house? And the answer is resoundingly, yes. There's a doctor in the house. The street doctor picked up bodies off the street. He's broke up fights. He has negotiated peace treaties. He is the street doctor. Extra, extra, extra. Street is all about it.
Yes, sir.
Extra, extra. The street is all about it. The doctor's back in the house. Doctor, how is it that you were able to pick up bodies from the street when the coroner's office or the medical examiner or the undertaker wouldn't pick them up?
Well, that happened one time. That happened one time, and then I had to back up from that. And the reason why, because it was too much on my heart. That happened when I, you know. But some of them funerals, brother, when people were deep, man. But it goes back to the training from that hole. You know, a lot of stuff that, you know, you have to be trained. You're going into a fight. You got to be trained. I was trained by the Creator. And that's the best training you can have, bro. Hello?
Have a few more minutes with the doctor.
Yeah,
I'm here, doctor. 805-727-7013. You can speak with the doctor. You're prepared to go into Jersey City. They said Jersey City and Trenton and Camden are three of the roughest cities, but I tell you, Newark is a template. If you can survive those cities, you think, Doctor, we can go in them cities too?
Yes, we are. We want to hit the whole state of New Jersey first. You know, charity starts at home before it spreads abroad.
That's right, doctor.
We're going to hit New Jersey first, and then from New Jersey, and then we go on. So this is what I'm going to do. I got to get on out of here now. I know that that's why you kept on the phone ringing.
Doctor, one last question. It has been rumored that you've been hired by the city of Newark, New Jersey, i.e. the mayor, Roz Morocco, to assist in the street campaign. Is there any truth to that rumor?
Okay. What's happening is this mayor is, and I'm glad I can close out with this mayor, a great human being. I can't say enough about him. Real, down-to-earth, vibrations high. But you know where he came from, his father and his mother. He got a thing they call Occupying the Block. Occupying the Block is he brings the city hall, all the people that social workers, jobs, everything. He brings the door to him. Set up right here, baby. He said, I'm from a hardcore spot. And he tells you, you know, all hands on deck, and they have to come out on the street and serve the people on the street. Yes, they have a system in which they got to formally get that together now. It was in the college state, and it worked, so they got to do it again. But this area here has never seen nothing like this since I've been.
Doctor, thank you. We have had the emergency room. We will hope to have you back on the show again. I'm going to be, I hope, offline in our talk. We're going to sit down face-to-face, and we're going to plan a tour. The street doctor and the street preacher meets the streets. Believe in yourself tour. We're going to stand by. Thank you again, doctor, for your appearance on Religion Means Alive. We're going to continue for another 13 minutes with others who would like to join us.
They're calling me now because I'm on my way to
Maryland. Thank you, doctor. I know you're on call. Doctors are always on call. So, doctor, go on to your next procedure, your next surgery, and let's extricate Negroisms from the streets, and let's put love back in the streets and believe in yourself. The street is all about it. Thank you, doctor.
Okay, brother.
Yes. Dear beloved people, we're continuing with our broadcast, Religion Means Alive. We've had the street doctor, a man who's now been touted and lauded throughout Newark, and now he's become a nationwide phenomenon. You know, one of the gauges of a relevancy of a person is to ask some of the younger people, I mean, what they call the gangbangers, the hardcore bangers. Y'all know the street doctor? Y'all know the street doctor? And they know him, and they are touched by him. And I think that it's important. When I was growing up, I saw leaders who walked the streets and talked to our people. There was a man that recruited me into the civil rights movement named Willie Ricks, the Reverend Willie Ricks, and also a man by the name of James Bell. They were not afraid to come in the pool room. They were not afraid to talk to people and pick them up and pull their humanity. I believe if we had 1,000 persons like that, we would revive the African-American community and bring life to the dead. Our people are obviously dead because of the fact that millions of our young people have mentally dropped out before they even started the race. And just as the great Dr. Benjamin Elijah Mays says, he said, the man behind has to run faster than the man in front. Every other ethnic group is ahead of us. But what our people need is motivational and transformational lectures, just like we heard from the street doctor. And he and I are going to go on a tour.
Hello?
Yes. Oh, doctor, you're still on the air with us. Okay, I think the doctor's gone. But he's always on the move. He's been gracious enough to come on our program to talk with us. We're going to plan more activities. See, we haven't lost faith. We have increased our faith to work first where we are, and then move to wherever we can assist and change in the African American community. I know you all, some of you heard about the nasty exchange between President William Jefferson Clinton and some people in the Black Lives Matter movement. They challenged him on his policies. Now, others defended him, and I know what happened to the African American community in the 90s. I know that there was chaos. I know there was mass implosion. I know that African Americans asked the political people to change. But there's somewhere between the line there's a happy medium. But I think that we as a people, now some of these things I'm not going to share with you, but I have some somewhat radical proposal for cleaning our communities up. First thing we got to do is clean the minds up. There has to be a core of us who are willing to clean these communities up and make them livable. I'm tired of migrating. I'm tired of having to run and go somewhere else to get decency in my neighborhood. I got to go to somebody else. It's time for us to clean our own neighborhoods up. And as Earl Graves said in Black Enterprise magazine, let's take back the community. And I believe that this is a beginning effort. Now, others are doing the same thing besides street dogs. What we need is a coalition. As Imam Muhammad said, a coalition to reconstruct unified community involvement and leadership. Crucial. We're going to revive the Crucial Campaign. We're going to revive the New Earth Team, sending in teams of volunteers, just like they have Habitat for Humanity, to rebuild neighborhoods. We're also going to send in back Blight Arrest and Pioneer Patrol, even if necessary, to have armed men, as Harold Cruz called for, to put down crime and grime, and just like the woman who beat up a senior citizen. You know, you don't need a jail cell for that woman. All that woman needs is a good whooping. Now, I know this is against the ACLU, but I'm tired of being politically correct. You know what? That's why there's a new political climate coming in this country, because people are tired of political correctness. We need to clean our neighborhoods up and fire our young people up to be in school, fire our young men up to go to medical school, to be dentists, and insist that this $2.1 trillion that we have go into our own hands and develop our own communities. I'm excited. I'm pumped up. I'm fired up to have the street doc. You can join the conversation. We're going to be on the air another 5 minutes. Just dial in at 805-727-7013, and we will continue this forum. Street doc has left. Happy birthday to Mayor Raj Baraka. He's celebrating his birthday. We're happy with what he's doing. We're happy with all the good efforts, and we're going to continue to work to revive our community, to bring life back to our communities. We're not going to sit around and complain and bitch and moan about what's in our community. We're going to be men and women, and we're going to pick up the challenge of the street doctor and all the other similarly situated people. So we're going to keep working, brothers. We're not going to stop. You know, we're going to continuously working until we have that. I'm sorry about the connection of the street doctor with bad. Hey, but we're going to keep on working with bad connections until we get the right corrections. We're going to continue to work and be fired up. And all it takes is one person. Rosa Parks got tired of sitting down. Miss Mosley got tired of seeing black men fill the Tallahatchie River and the Mississippi River. She showed Emmett Till's body, her son's body, just as it was, with his eyes smashed out. She showed that. She said, the undertaker told her, said, "Will you? Do you want us to, you know, to dress the body up?" She said, "No, I want them to see it the way it is." And I could see Emmett Till's picture in Jet Magazine just like it was before me then. And it changed people. People got tired of lynching. And after a while, that was kicked off the modern civil rights movement. Rosa Parks got tired of going to the back of the bus. She stopped. She stopped sitting down and stood up. Don't think these people didn't risk their lives. Yes, it's dangerous, but it's even more dangerous to be a slave. Yes, these people could have been killed, but you could have been killed drinking a glass of water. But they risked their lives to save lives out our people. You can join the conversation at 805. We have a few more minutes down, 3 minutes to be exact, 805-727-7013. And those of you who want to make contributions can send them to imamalfred@gmail.com, PayPal. Or you can send them to religionmeansalive@gmail.com. That is religionmeansalive@gmail.com. Want to announce to you that the first Sunday in May, we will be at the Mosque's headquarters. And we're going to have Why Black Lives Matter Part 2, the people, the Joseph people. We're going to discuss vision, work plan, strategies for reviving our community. So we ask you to continue to support Religion Means Alive. We thank you for your support. And we have planned, Brother Glenn Lowry, we have plans to have Eddie Gloud and many others going to come on this program. We're back on the air. We're going to start interviewing people. Yes, so I'm just reading Michael Eric Dyson, President Obama looked for an escape hatch instead of addressing black issues. Watch what the author has to say in the link below. Well, Michael Eric Dyson, you don't have much to say to me. I'd like to have you on my show to debate you. I think you are not qualified to lead our people. I think it's a shame that you have taken an ordination in the Baptist Church and you refuse to follow the gospel. The gospel that Jesus Christ preached when he accepted to lead the people. He said, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me. He has anointed me to preach good news to the poor, to give liberty to the captives, and proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. That's what Jesus picked up. He said, as much as you do to the least of them. I've never seen you out here. I don't see you doing anything that the street doctor's doing. I see you just stand up in high places. And so I challenge you, Dr. Dyson, Reverend Dr. Dyson, to come out, get involved. Let us help rebuild Detroit where you came from. Go back to Tabernacle Baptist Church in the streets and go and work. Work out there in Southeast Washington. Stop this fine highfalutin. Now, stop criticizing and get out there and follow what you're ordained. So I can't blast Cornel West because he's never claimed to be ordained. But there's a specialty that comes with an ordination. People say they ordained, they ask the question, were you called to do this work? That's the first question they ask in the ordination committee. And the answer becomes, yes, I was called to the gospel ministry. Again, the gospel ministry calls. A Muslim is told that you witness that there is no God but God, and Muhammad is the messenger of God. And so if Muhammad is the messenger of God and he went to work to save his people, then we have to pick up Muhammad's mission. And Jesus Christ told the people, so all these things I shall do, you should do greater things. Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You'll listen once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive.